Stacey Collective and our climate change series, Our Climate is Changing, Why Aren't We? My name is Anjana Nagarajan Bhutani, and together with Meera Kaimal, we'll be talking to Justine Burt, a Bay Area climate change activist and the author of The Great Pivot, about green job creation. Welcome, Justine.
Thanks for having me.
So Justine, an important question on everyone's mind. Will green jobs help solve the unemployment crisis? Yes, we are in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. We're dealing with a climate crisis and an unemployment crisis, all of which are dire. Well, don't you think we have an opportunity to use this disruption, to use a Silicon Valley term, to create something even better?
Well, that's a really good point. The pandemic has been horrible. Over 500,000 people have died as a result. And it's disrupted so many systems in our society, systems that we didn't know were as vulnerable and brittle as they are. So it disrupted healthcare and where kids go to school and where adults go to work. It disrupted public transportation. In the Bay Area, Caltrain ridership is down 94%. BART ridership is down 85%. It disrupted airline travel, as we all know, and the commercial food supply chain. You remember a year ago, about 12 months ago now, we were walking through the grocery stores and seeing empty shelves and empty freezers and wondering what was going on. At the same time, restaurants had closed down, hotels were closing down, schools were closing down. And I guess we all figured that the food that was being grown and raised for restaurants and hotels and schools would just be shifted over to the grocery stores. And instead we saw it was just being thrown away. Millions of gallons of milk was being dumped out, onions were being plowed under, lettuce was being thrown away. And we wondered why they couldn't just shift it over to the grocery stores, which all of a sudden had 200 to 300% increase in demand. So a lot of the systems that we have in our society are more vulnerable and brittle than we thought they were. And as horrible as the pandemic has been, it's true what you said. This is our opportunity to now that these systems have been disrupted, to build back better, to build more resilient systems that can bounce back from future shocks. This isn't going to be the last pandemic. We're just starting to see the ravages of climate change. Now's our opportunity to build back better.
So what is a green job? How is it different from regular job we all have?
Right. So a green job is going to reduce the environmental impact of society. It's going to get us more into balance with nature. And we're seeing that conventional way we do most everything is not a sustainable, resilient way. So there's opportunities to change our energy system, our transportation system, how we use materials, our food supply chain to restore healthy forests. We in California and the West Coast, 4 million acres burned this past fall, which was pretty tough for those of us living through that time. So it's time to restore the health of forests, waterways. We could be sequestering carbon in soils. And, you know, we've lost 70% of all wildlife since 1970, and we could be restoring wildlife populations as well. So there's a lot of work to be done to reduce our environmental impact on the earth and come into balance with the planet that supports life.
Justine Burt is the founder and CEO of Apricel in the Bay Area. It's an environmental sustainability consulting firm, and it helps businesses create products with fewer supplies and less waste.
In 2019, Justine published The Great Pivot.
It's a book which gives us a roadmap to decarbonize and dematerialize the economy and create millions of green jobs. So today we're going to discuss what are your ideas for meaningful, well-paying green jobs that excite people, as opposed to, you know, Amazon warehouse jobs. So Justine, why do you say we need green jobs that are meaningful?
Well, I think everybody deserves to have a job that makes them excited to get up out of bed in the morning and go to work. People's work should give them a sense of purpose and meaning. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done to get society to a more sustainable place. Decarbonizing our energy system, decarbonizing our buildings, decarbonizing our transportation systems. There's work to be done to create a circular economy. So what we primarily have is a linear flow of economy where we extract raw materials, we manufacture them into products, we use them, and then we throw them away. I mean, nationally, we're recycling or composting 32% of our waste materials, and it could be much higher. We could be preventing waste, reusing, recycling, composting, creating more durable goods that last longer that we can repair. So there's a whole circular economy work we could be doing. There's reducing food waste, there's restoring nature. And I talk to so many people who ask, what green jobs are coming in the future? What can I do? And I say, pick your passion. Which problem are you really excited to work on? Are you really excited about pulling plastic fishing nets, lost and abandoned fishing nets out of the Pacific Ocean, and having them recycled into swimsuits or new carpeting? Are you really excited about retrofitting buildings to remove natural gas and replace it with electric? Are you excited about microgrids? Do you want to be able to pick up surplus prepared food and take it to homeless shelters? Do you want to work with burrowing owls? Like, what's the problem that you're really excited about? Find a way to do that, because we have the money in the society, we have the resources, we have the talent, and this pandemic has shown that we need to change the way we do things. So find a place to dig in and help.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics produces unemployment numbers every month. Justine, what do those numbers mean? I understand that many people are misclassified or not represented at all in those numbers. Can you explain how that number is calculated? What is the actual unemployment number? Or more importantly, how should we be talking about it at all?
That's a really good question. So when you hear unemployment rate is 6.2%, that's just measuring people who actively looked for work in the last 4 weeks, meaning they submitted a resume, they had an interview. But there are all these other people who don't count as unemployed, who I consider unemployed. So somebody who applied for a few jobs in the last 12 months, but nothing came through, they're not considered unemployed. People who've given up looking, people who are working part-time with no benefits who really would like full-time with benefits don't count either. So we're down about 10 million jobs below where we were a year ago. And if you count the, if you look at this from a broader perspective, there are actually 26 million people who would like to have full-time work and for whom we could be creating green jobs.
Justine, let's talk a little bit about Biden's climate change agenda. In January, President Biden released his plan to tackle the climate crisis, and he talked about putting America on the path to, quote, clean energy future, net zero emissions, and well-paying union jobs. So what do you think? Is he on the right path? Will his plan create the jobs we need for a sustainable future? And in your vision of the green pivot needed in the economy, what role does the government play?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I'm so glad Biden's getting so much attention for his climate plan. It's fantastic. He's talking about transitioning to clean energy, clean transportation, it being a just transition, and helping people on the front lines of pollution. People who live near oil refineries and power plants and highways and ports and airports, they're bearing the burden of pollution of our fossil fuel-based economy, and they shouldn't. And it causes higher asthma rates and all kinds of disease. So he's talking about a just transition for people on the front lines of the pollution, but also helping the coal miners and people in the fossil fuel industry transition to different types of jobs. And so it has to be a thoughtful conversation about how to do this transition. Coal miners in Western Pennsylvania, you can't just train them to be software engineers and have them write apps for smartphones. I mean, it needs to be a transition that makes sense. If this group of people has a wonderful skill set working with hydraulics and heavy machinery, do you really want them programming? So we just need to think about the jobs that we want to have to build the future we need, and the skill sets of the people who are currently in transition. Government's role in part is to help that transition, to help have that conversation. Okay, what skills do you have? What kind of work do you want to be doing? How do we help you? And so government doesn't need to do everything. I mean, it's nice that Biden's talking about this climate plan, but government doesn't have to do all the heavy lifting at the federal level because, you know, it may not pass Congress anyway. So let's not sit on our hands waiting for something to come out of Washington. At the same time, we could be working at the local level, at the regional level, at the state level to have the same conversation. What kinds of jobs do we want in the future? And how do we make that happen? So we want the private sector playing a certain role. We want the nonprofit sector playing a certain role. Government can play a convening role. It sure is helpful when government sets goals, has a vision, develops ordinances, levies fees on the behavior we want to discourage, and using those revenues to pay for the green jobs that will do the work, the transition work. So, I mean, government doesn't have to do everything, but there's some really key roles it could play.
In your book, Justine, The Great Pivot, you talk about the fear of automation and you say, quote, "Not knowing the degree to which automation will replace humans is a scary prospect, but we should actually see this trend as an opportunity. Robots are better positioned to do the types of tedious or dangerous work that cause humans repetitive stress and other injuries," end quote. Justine, we've lost a lot of middle-class jobs, not only to automation, but also outsourcing and the gig economy. What are the new types of green jobs you envision for Americans in the near future? And which sectors do you think will see the most growth? And what kind of jobs will they be?
Well, a few years ago, there were a lot of articles about robots taking your jobs, and it seemed like there was a lot of fear of automation. It would be great to automate dull and dangerous work, repetitive work, where somebody would be doing the same, turning the same screw over and over again, and it causes carpal tunnel syndrome. Let's let automation do the dull and dangerous work and free people up to do work that is maybe more interesting and more creative. At the same time, our country's also been outsourcing jobs to other countries, and there's been a loss of manufacturing in the US. So the question is, what kind of work do we want to be doing? I wrote a Medium article with Mary Chambers this past summer that looked at other people's analysis of what kinds of green jobs and how many green jobs we could be creating. And there were six different categories that I found. So Mark Jacobson at Stanford University with his graduate students calculated we could be creating 5.2 million green jobs switching to 100% renewable energy. And there will be losses in the fossil fuel industry, but a lot more gains in renewable energy. We could be restoring healthy forests. If we had a civilian conservation corps like we had in the 1930s, that created 3.4 million jobs for young men, and it was only young men aged 17 to 28, we planted 3 billion trees in this country. And that jobs program helped pull us out of the Great Depression. We could be creating a national high-speed rail network. That would be 2.5 million jobs so that we can have a world-class train system like China and India and Japan and Germany and Italy and France and Great Britain do. Organic agriculture, that would be 1 million jobs. Recycling 75% of our waste, 1 million jobs. Building retrofits, 800,000 jobs. Altogether, this would be 17 million green jobs that we could be creating if we set our minds.
I guess the question that people want to know is how much they pay. So here's a figure from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. According to them, fossil fuel jobs pay between 70 to 80,000 a year. Do you think renewable energy jobs will pay as much?
It's a really good question. So the state of California is talking a lot about high road jobs. You want to make sure that people can make enough in green jobs to support a family, have benefits, and as they acquire more skills and they become more talented, that they should be paid more. There should be a career ladder. So that's something you definitely want to crosswalk with green jobs. People also deserve to have benefits. They deserve to have access to healthcare if they're working full time. So it's an important question. We want to make sure that these important jobs pay enough to live on. And currently, the reason a lot of coal miners are holding on to their jobs in Western Pennsylvania and Appalachia is because they do pay well. And somebody with a high school diploma can be making $100,000 to $140,000 a year, which is enough to buy a house in Western Pennsylvania and West Virginia, you know, send kids to college, have vacations, you know, have a truck and a jet ski and all that. So you understand why they want to hold on to that. So there's plenty of money, there's plenty of resources. We just need to steer a stream of that river of money going towards the fossil fuel industries into investing in a sustainable future, and then have the conversation of what kinds of jobs, hybrid jobs, do people deserve to have, and make that happen.
Transitioning to a world with meaningful green jobs is not a zero-sum game. Nobody needs to lose in order for this pivot to be successful. But obviously, people who now work in the fossil fuel industry today may not see it that way, and they will need to be retrained. So what kind of retraining will these workers need? Can you give us an example?
Well, the pipe fitters union that currently puts in natural gas piping is obviously concerned about a transition away from natural gas. And there's a lot of work to be done to change piping from wastewater treatment plants so that recycled water could be used on golf courses and in other non-potable applications. So there are transitions that could be made. We do need to spend more time thinking through that transition and how to help that happen, because we don't want massive layoffs where people just lose their jobs and they don't ever get anything. I mean, there have been transitions before. We used to have horses and buggies. We used to do a lot more lead mining. We used to, you know, haul water out of coal mines with buckets. And then we got steam engines that help pump it out. I mean, there have been transitions before, and we could be more thoughtful about it so it's less painful for people. We just need to have a vision of a sustainable future that we want and figure out how to get the resources to those who are interested in making the transition. Because some people do want to make transitions into green jobs. When I worked for a large engineering consulting firm and I had a job opening, I received a lot of resumes from people who were in mining and oil and gas and nuclear and Department of Defense. These are people who wanted to switch over. So how do we make it easier for them? That's the question.
What kind of role do you think corporate America will have to play during this pivot to a greener job market? How will they benefit?
Well, building on what I said before, government doesn't need to do all the heavy lifting. I mean, there are really important roles for the private sector, for the financial sector. If there's a project that has a return on investment, like microgrids for K-12 schools, then by all means, let the private financial sector pour its vast resources into this, invest in this, and they get the return. It could really speed up the transition if all these resources that are out there could be deployed in service of this. I interviewed Jigar Shah, who up until recently was the president of Generate Capital, a project finance organization company. And he said, listen, Justine, we've raised $1 trillion for climate solutions, and we've only been able to deploy 300 billion of it. We're sitting on $700 billion waiting to deploy it, but we need requests for proposals we can respond to. Like, he was all ready to do that, and the projects just weren't shovel ready. Jigar just announced he's moved over to the Department of Energy at the federal level to work on their $40 billion loan program, energy loan program. So if that tells you anything about where our society is going at this point, I think that's really interesting. But the private sector can deploy massive amounts of capital to help invest in this future that we need.
Justine, we ran a reader survey on green jobs in our community with our audience. And we have a question from Sushmita from San Jose. And she wants to know, her question's about women in green jobs. And she asked, what can green jobs do for women who are working from home? Because during the pandemic, many women left jobs to, you know, work from home and manage their houses and children. So what green jobs can women do from home?
Oh, there's so many things, depending on what your interest is. So one thing that we learned in this pandemic is that a lot more people are at home. They're stuck at home and they've been thinking, time to clean out my house. I've got a lot of stuff here. we need to free up some space. And people have been dropping off just boxes and bags of stuff on the thrift stores, many of whom were closed for months. And so even though they weren't allowing people to drop off stuff, people were still dropping off stuff. And the thrift stores, especially when they weren't open, couldn't sell stuff. So there's so many opportunities to upcycle things. There's a thrift store in Lane County, Oregon called St. Vincent de Paul, which we also have here in the Bay Area. And they hired, a few years ago, they hired a full-time fashion designer, Mitra Tester, to upcycle the materials that they were receiving as donations. And so she had a creative fashion mind, and she saw leather couches coming in that were being donated that had rips and stains in them. And she started cutting apart the leather and sewing up tote bags. She saw there were a lot of donations of flannel shirts and hoodie sweatshirts, and she cut the sleeves off both and then sewed the flannel sleeves onto the hoodie sweatshirt bodies. Now keep in mind, they're right down the street from the University of Oregon. And so the students found out about these new jackets and bought them out. So if we can have people, and this could happen in someone's home, if you go look at what's in the thrift stores and figure out if you've got this creative mind to upcycle them, any ideas for that, that would be great. We also could be doing a lot more. 40% of all the materials going to the landfill are construction and demolition waste. If we can salvage more of these materials and find markets for them, that's something somebody could do at home. If they could get pictures of the materials that are being pulled out, clawfoot tubs, porcelain sinks, kitchen cabinets, solid oak wood flooring, old growth timber framing, and just create a spreadsheet of it and then get the word out about what's available. And then it's the nails have been pulled out and the cabinets are now sitting in this warehouse. I've talked to a number of people in the building deconstruction industry who would love to have somebody put together a database so that somebody who needs kitchen cabinets but doesn't need them to be perfect and new could look on the database and then go pick them up. So just organizing materials and helping them find new homes or upcycling them would be a great opportunity and a great help. Just one example.
Justine, ordinary people like all of us want to make a difference, make a contribution to help avert this climate crisis. What can we do, families, children, to help our communities and start making a dent in this climate change?
A few years ago, I heard this great story about Mohandas Gandhi. And I heard that this woman went to visit Gandhi with her overweight son. And she went up to him and said, "Could you tell my son to stop eating sweets and candy?" And Gandhi looked at her and looked at the boy and said, "Can you come back in 2 weeks and ask me that same question?" And the woman was confused, but she agreed and went away. She came back 2 weeks later, and Gandhi looked at her son and said, "I'd like you to stop eating sweets and candy." And the mother said, "Okay, thank you, but why did I have to go away and come back 2 weeks later?" And Gandhi told the woman, "Well, madam, 2 weeks ago, I didn't know if I could stop eating sweets and candy." So we have to be the change we want to see in the world, right? So as we make the changes in our lives, we can inspire others around us. So if we can reduce our environmental impact, burn fewer fossil fuels, bicycle instead of drive, when we can recycle more, compost more, it'll influence the people around us.
You know, I'm from India, but I actually haven't heard that story about Gandhi. So thanks for that. It was a really eye-opening conversation, Justine. You really got me thinking about how to make my own job and, you know, the way I live more green. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
This is Desi Collective with Anjana Nagarajan Bhutani and Meera Kaimal. We were talking to author and climate reality activist Justine Burt. Tune in to our next episode of Our Climate is Changing, Why Aren't We? To learn how you can make a difference.